ABC Listen. Podcasts, radio, news, music, and more.
By occurring both in the tropics and on an active volcano clad in thick, thick jungle with steaming vents and quicksand and lava fields all around, to make your way up, cutting through river channels and raining 24/7, and with limited food, limited water, thorns to make our way through thick jungle, to eventually make your way up to about halfway up this volcano is where...
Sorry, that bit is redacted, because we're going to try and keep the mystery alive for a minute.
I wish we could bottle what you're feeling right now.
You said it, Peter. Welcome to What the Duck, where we harness the surprising things in nature and then ride them like a runaway stagecoach right through the middle of your day. I'm Ann Jones, and this is Peter Vaughan, a man on the hunt for a treasure and also a PhD student at Monash University.
I've been something of a twitcher, a mad keen bird watcher since I was quite young.
I wouldn't expect anything less of a What the Duck contributor. Now, to the mystery. We're after a creature that he's barely ever seen, either alive or dead, that is born from an egg on the side of an active volcano, but only in the typhoon season. And it's not monkey magic.
The first time I ever heard about the bird was a long time ago now.
Well, yes, thanks, Peter. It is a bird.
Got hooked very, very quickly on the majesty and just unknown mystique, almost, of seabirds.
Uh-huh. It's a seabird.
And the Vanuatu petrel.
Ding, ding, ding.
The Vanuatu petrel was one of the birds buried in the back of the field guide in a reference section for possible vagrants to Australia.
And it's still there in the book. Birds that occasionally get blown into our waters. A bird that is so rare that it's endangered. A bird that prefers to maintain mystery, like Banksy, but more flappy.
It would be fair to say that they're virtually unknown to modern science.
So that's our city of gold for today, the Vanuatu petrel. A bird that acts like a baddie in a superhero movie. It zooms past your sinking boat, then it flies straight back to its lair within an active volcano. And what would it look like if you ran across one?
Essentially a miniature albatross. They're a similarly long-winged, streamlined bird that's supremely adapted for life at sea, but they're much smaller than an albatross, so structurally similar, but maybe a third to a quarter of the size.
The petrel weighs about 400 grams, which is about a can of soft drink, but it's much better at long-distance flight than a can of soft drink.
But the Vanuatu petrel is a really striking-looking bird. It's grey across the back and white underneath, with a little dark cap and a white collar around the back of the neck.
From underneath, as the bird flies past you in the middle of the Pacific, it's almost all white. But it looks as if someone has taken a grey lead and rubbed it over the texture of the wings, leaving a line where the bone holds the wing out.
We call it a carpal bar.
It has this stunning effect of sort of making a 3D object look like it's a 2D drawing, pretending to be a 3D object. The Vanuatu petrel was actually first spotted by Western scientists in 1927.
There was a group from the United States on a museum collecting expedition, and they were going around and, you know, as it sounds, collecting birds by shooting them and taking specimens to describe new species and document the biodiversity of the South Pacific. They were on a vessel and rowed out to then shoot the Vanuatu petrels and other seabirds with a shotgun.
You'd think the pellets would rip them apart, but At the time, they shot 6 Vanuatu petrels. It's just they didn't know that that's what they'd shot.
The Vanuatu petrel, along with several other species, was all considered to be one super species called a Juan Fernandez petrel. And it wasn't until 1976 that another researcher looked at the specimens and realised that these 6 were actually of a slightly different form, slightly smaller and with a darker underwing bar, that carpal bar. So Fowler described a distinct Vanuatu form of white-necked petrel.
So they still thought that all of these petrels were one species with just different varieties, sort of like roses in your garden. That was up until 1983. Mr. Hawke called his first. Bob Hawke became Prime Minister.
People of Australia.
Forecast is for a maximum temperature of 42 degrees.
68 people.
The Ash Wednesday fires happened.
Thousands upon thousands of hectares of grassland and bushland.
Dick Smith flew all the way around the world in a helicopter.
He logged 320 hours of solo flying to do it.
And there was a bloke that rode almost all the way across the Pacific before having to be rescued by the Australian Navy. His name was Peter Bird. And speaking of birds across the Pacific,
a bird that looked like a white-necked petrel was discovered road-killed in northern New South Wales near a little town called Kempsey.
Currently 12 degrees in Coffs Harbour.
All right, it wasn't big enough news to actually make the news, but Kempsey, it's just north of Port Macquarie, and that is a very long way from Vanuatu. Northern New South Wales naturalist and seabird enthusiast Stephen Todderman remembers it well.
Actually, this bird turned up.
Oh, it sounds like the start of a bad joke.
So this fellow called Greg Clancy, who's a hands-on ornithologist and understands the value of scientific collecting, he saw an unusual bird on the highway, and it was a seabird.
Is that normally where you would expect to find such a bird?
No, normally you would find them on the beach. So you'll find, particularly after cyclones, we get a lot of tropical birds blown down to the southern latitudes, exhausted. And you'll find lots of interesting and unusual birds on the beach.
But this tired little seabird made it well past the beach and went inland where it met its end on a highway.
It eventually found its way to the Australian Museum.
And it was subsequently described as a white-necked petrel.
There we go again, lumping this bird in with the white-necked petrel. And it actually took about 20 years for someone to notice that it was different enough to be something different. That is, a species that had not been described by science. It was named Pterodoma occulta, roughly translated as the hidden petrel or the hidden winged racer. It was known as the Vanuatu petrel because of those 6 specimens that were shot in the 1920s in the northern waters of the archipelago. They were shot there, so that's the best locality that we had.
So my name is Rolenas Barileo.
Rolenas is with the Department of Environmental Protection and Conservation with the government of Vanuatu.
Communities would know it as a bird that comes, flies in and, you know, makes noises at night.
Even locals in northern Vanuatu didn't actually know much about this bird.
And they know that it's a seabird, but it's breeding up in the mountains in Vanualava. Those are some of the things that we know of as, you know, like local knowledge. Apart from that, in terms of the signs of the bird itself, no, not much. We don't have information on it.
But if there's one thing I know about international twitches, is that if they've got any small amount of information to track down a bird for their list, well, the hunt was on.
Especially where the niche subgroup of birders that is seabird researchers is concerned, a new species is like catnip to attract interest and expeditions to the area to try and crack the code of what's been going on with what's otherwise only known from dead birds and study skins. And most of that was spearheaded by a researcher called Stephen Totterman from New South Wales.
Ah, Stephen. We heard from him earlier. He's one of those people whose will is driven by
adventure. So I was just keen for adventure, and I enjoy being in these remote places where there aren't too many people, and you just got to be intrepid.
Right. Now, Stephen says...
I was keen bird watcher.
But that statement doesn't really do his interest justice. Take a listen to just what he was willing to do to try and solve some of the mysteries of the Vanuatu petrel.
So I was thought I'd go and have a look for it. And the first place I visited was Mary Lava Island in northern Vanuatu.
This is in 2005, mere years after the official naming of the species. And remember that at this stage, no one knew where this thing was nesting. It had only ever been seen at sea or dead next to a highway in Kempsey.
It took me 2 days to get there by ship. I was there for almost for a month waiting for that ship to return and take me off the island. But I didn't find any evidence for Vanuatu petrel on that particular island.
See what I mean? Keen birdwatcher is not really what you would actually use to describe this sort of birding drive.
But I returned there in 2007 to follow up some reports of seabirds breeding on Vanua Lava Island. It's got an active volcano. Very few people live there, and they all live down on the coast. So the inland, the interior, is just very rugged, and you got a big crater with a couple of lakes in the middle, and then on the flanks you've got some steaming solfataras and some lukewarm hot springs. Some of them are coloured blue. The solfataras are yellow because of all the sulfur. It's rainforest all the way up the flanks, wet tropical rainforest.
Oh, that sounds amazing. And there'd been the reports of the birds there. So did you have an idea where you were going to zero in on?
No, because nobody was going up there anymore. They knew there were birds around because you could hear them down on the coast flying over in the night.
Petrels can fly for days at a time hunting at sea. They nest in burrows and come home to swap over parenting duties. And when they do come to land, they come under the cover of darkness, where it's harder for predators to see where they and their burrows are.
So in 2007... we went up there and we didn't go to the right place. We didn't reach the breeding grounds, but I did hear the birds flying overhead in that direction in the night. So I knew something was there. I didn't even know what the birds were. I didn't recognize them as the petrel calls at all.
You heard these birds flying overhead. Did you ever actually manage to lay eyes on one of these petrels?
Not in the dark. So I had to go back. 2 years later, yeah, you have to be, I mean, that's part of science. You've got to be very persistent and patient.
That's one way of putting it. Righto then, it's time for Stephen's third trip to look for the petrel's breeding grounds on a volcanic island in Vanuatu.
So I returned in 2009, and then after some effort, with the assistance of the locals, and particularly one of my guides, John Fraser, he eventually found some Vanuatu petrels in their burrows. So that marked the discovery of the breeding grounds.
Wow. Wow. What was your feelings and thoughts in those moments?
I wasn't too excited about it, I don't think, but I was just kind of satisfied that we'd solved that little mystery.
And was that the first time that breeding locations were actually found?
Yeah. Yep.
Yeah. That's amazing.
That's the only known breeding location. It's amazing, but it's not unusual because there's several other mysterious petrels in the South Pacific.
Okay. Stephen is astoundingly low-key about the discovery of the breeding grounds, none of which, of course, would have happened without the locals. Here's Rolenas again. She visited the Northern Islands around the time that the colony was pinpointed.
We went to one of the villages and they were talking about this bird. They were saying, oh, we have a bird that comes in at night and, you know, but it lives up in the mountain. And so at that time, the chiefs were saying, look, we want to know if it's a bird that's, you know, unique to us. We would like to be able to protect it. So I said, okay, well, maybe I'm going to help you to try to find some funding to help to study on the species. And that was when we came back and started a conversation with Mark.
From BirdLife International.
And that's how we found Peter.
And Peter is...
And, of course, Peter was interested as well.
Yeah, well, he's more than interested. I think that he is sort of obsessed with the petrel now. You remember Peter, the PhD candidate from Monash?
Oh, blimey.
That's where he steps into this story for real. He's on a quest to study these birds, but to do so actually forced him to become a kind of science diplomat.
Absolutely. Vanuatu, particularly remote Vanuatu, has a very complicated system of land management where villagers manage local lands and then layered structures of chieftains exist over top of that who manage larger regions with multiple villages encompassed in that. And so a big part of the research has been making connections with local communities and local chieftains to gain access to the land and gain permission to conduct our research.
And that included working with local authorities and volunteers and learning to communicate in Bizlama, an English-based Creole language.
Only two?
Or at least try to. And yes, pigeon is this pigeon word for bird.
Pigeon... When Emmy come home, come back, come inside, see.
The Vanuatu petrel by occurring both in the tropics and on an active volcano clad in thick, thick jungle with steaming vents and quicksand and lava fields all around.
Has anyone checked if Peter is actually just teleported to the Raiders of the Lost Ark or something?
The Vanuatu petrel is perhaps occurring in a combination of the harshest environments it's possible for humans to try and conduct research in. So to actually access the colony, which requires airlines and boat trips, and then once you're actually at the island, there's a substantial amount of walking. It's what we'd know in Australia basically as bush bashing. Cutting through river channels and through thick jungle. We spent days hiking through the jungle, sweating, covered in mud. It was in the wet season in February, so raining 24/7 with ticks and limited food, limited water, thorns to make our way through. Because about halfway up this volcano is where the Vanuatu petrels have set themselves up and are breeding.
So we're finally getting to the centre of that treasure map, where X marks the spot for Peter's treasure, the only known nesting colony of the Vanuatu petrel. And to add to the drama, it's got to be dark for the birds to get active.
We arrived at the colony in the afternoon and were setting up tents and preparing camp, with it certainly on my part a huge sense of trepidation in the time since the last people had been there. With so few birds, potentially they could have straight up gone extinct and no one would have known.
This would put a dampener on your PhD research for sure.
And so after dark, sitting up and waiting for the first birds to start coming in during the early stages of the evening was one of the more stressful experiences I've ever had, until the first bird called over the crater where we were sitting. And my supervisor was present at the time, and his words were, "I wish we could bottle what you're feeling right now."
Yeah, I'll have what he's having.
The relief and vindication of having gone to all that effort and now birds were present and calling around the colony was such a thrill and a rush. It was just amazing. And subsequent to that, having felt tired and exhausted walking up this volcano, we immediately got all the gear together for catching and processing and starting to work on the birds. and made our way out up this sort of scree boulder slope above the camp to try and catch birds. And being in a petrel colony with a good number of birds at night, especially early at night, as they're all coming in full of food for chicks or ready to swap over with their partners incubating on eggs, is the most incredible experience in nature I think I've ever had the fortune to encounter, where there's circling birds from right above you to hundreds of meters away, bouncing calls and echoing back off these rock faces and boulders with sort of eerie whooping and cackling calls. And as you make your way then up through the colony, through really dense, thick vegetation that you can't even see exactly where you're placing your feet, you have to separate the vegetation out in front of you until a good track's been formed, because there's birds scurrying around in little runways down underneath these coral ferns and cane grass, and you can hear the little scurrying of birds through the vegetation. And then when you come across a burrow, little cooing and growling calls to their partners down underneath the burrows. And when there are chicks, there's little piping, begging calls from the chicks. And it's so special to be totally surrounded by seabirds and noise. And there's the sight of them wheeling in spotlights, and the smell of them as well forms a big part of it. It's an overwhelming and extraordinary sensory experience to encounter.
Dare I ask what they smell like?
If I were being charitable, I would say it's sort of pleasantly musky, like wool that's been stored at the back of a drawer for a long time. Almost lanolin-type smell, but it does, unfortunately, have a distinctly fishy undertone that you can't quite get past. It's a uniquely seabird odour.
They smell a bit like a three-day-old bit of flake in a woolen jumper, and they sound like a duck on helium. And they're so rare and so remote that Western science basically knows nothing about them. And it's that last bit that Peter is trying to rectify with his research.
We have found 115 burrows across the parts of the colony that we could access. But there is a good amount of calling activity. There's high traffic in the air, suggesting that there's at least a couple of hundred pairs in the broader area.
The community is excited as well to know. Toba is one of the remote provinces of the country. This kind of study and the interaction between communities and researchers are very interesting, because they're also excited to learn about their new species and already talking about, okay, we're going to conserve this area because now we know that we have this species that's unique in the country and in our area with a limited range. So we are now putting up this land for conservation, and you know, that's always good news for the communities because it's going to help them to manage those species, but at the same time it's good for the government and the country.
This is still the only confirmed breeding colony of these birds, which can travel 1,000 or more kilometres in a foraging flight. So its importance cannot be overstated. And Peter's research, it may sound like a boy's own adventure, but it's actually very important, because knowing what these birds eat, where they go, how many there are, and what's ideal breeding conditions for them, all of these details will inform the future conservation efforts for this one of the world's rarest birds. What the Duck is an ABC podcast produced by me, Anne Jones, and Patria Ladgrove. We do it all on Wadawurrung and Kaurna land. If you've been on a treasure hunt for an elusive bird, or you've got a question that's been giving you the ducking irrits, then write me an email and tell me about it. whattheduck@abc.net.au.
You've been listening to an ABC podcast. Discover more great ABC podcasts, live radio, and exclusives on the ABC Listen app.